We tumbled through the portal, atoms spinning like toddlers allowed control of the teacups at Disney. When I hit ground, I heard a snap and felt a sudden warm wetness enveloping my left arm. Blood, I thought. I jolted upright, which was not easy because I couldn't quite tell yet which way upright was. My body seemed to know more than my head did, and I found a way into a sitting position. I looked around, dizzy and breathless, and I saw myself in a beautiful field. I mean that literally. I saw myself sitting in the field. Everything I was looking at looked backwards, somehow, and it made my stomach feel worse than it already felt. It took a solid minute of staring at myself and willing my toddler atoms to stop spinning and focus for me to realize I was staring into a pool of water. The blood I'd felt wash over my arm was not blood, but water. I checked where I'd landed, under the real me, not the reflected me, and I found the broken twigs that had made the sickening snap I'd blamed on my bones. I looked around me. Everything oriented correctly, it was beautiful.
We were in a field of gold-green grass, the kind of wild grass that is left on its own but doesn't grow too high so it won't make your ankles itchy to walk through. There were miles of grass and trees all around us, an endless landmass that just looked inexplicably peaceful, like there was nothing bad that could possibly happen there. I knew that was a dangerous thing to think, because anytime anyone ever thinks that about anything, they're immediately proven wrong in the worst way. But I couldn't even make myself care about that. Dotting the scenery every few feet were pools of water, like the one Vera had punched through, reflecting the perfect blue of the sky back up at us. Each pool had a sign with unreadable symbols carved into the wood. The symbols were beautiful too, and I didn't mind that I couldn't read them.
I don't think I've mentioned, because it hasn't come up between the chaos of the last three portal adventures, but there have been times when the animals from the pet cemetery, Lasagna, Gary, and most often Puddles, have just somehow shown up, followed us into the pocket dimension of the week. I guess residing beyond the veil allows them to travel the same way Amy can. However they do it, they did it again. Lasagna curled up under one of the trees not far from us, Gary flew contentedly from branch to branch, and Puddles found his way in between our feet.
Vera and I got up and walked a little ways off. We didn't know where we were headed, but the scenery was too amazing not to walk through, and the sense of urgency we'd had through the last few worlds didn't seem able to follow us through this one. We stopped beside another pond. I looked down into the water. I saw Vera, her reflection giving her away as she stared at me. I saw our hands clasped together, atoms buzzing into each other as they tried to settle back into their usual rhythms. I saw myself, staring back at me in a bizarre, unbroken cycle of observation. Something was stirring behind my eyes. I leaned closer, careful to make sure Vera balanced my weight so I wouldn't fall in. Something was definitely there, beyond my face. I squinted and let it come into focus. There was a whole other layer to the scene in the water. Something that wasn't a reflection of anything, but a world all of its own. I told Vera to check it out. We dropped our hands and squatted as low to the pool as we could without risking ripples due to our breathing.
I didn't see anything at first, beyond the reflection of Amy's face and its furrowed brow, wrinkled with concentration and cuteness. But I kept looking, and sure enough, yes, there was something there, moving on its own, unconcerned with our presence. A little miniaturized landscape, like a diorama engineered with many moving cars and impossibly tiny people. An entire civilization spread out before us, beyond us, filling up the pond and paying no attention to this world above. It was just crazy remarkable, absolutely breathtaking, just like everything there.
We got up and looked into the surrounding pools, sometimes looking together, and sometimes describing particularly interesting ones to each other if they'd wandered away. Each little world was unique and tiny and pulsing with undeniable life. We could recognize some things, trees, mountains, vehicles, that sort of thing. But others were completely nameless to us. Whole societies, whole universes that had technology either far beyond us or too separated from us for us to comprehend. We were giants peering into planets from their heavens, and they had no idea. I stopped at one more pond, smaller than most surrounding ones. There was a group of little speck people close to me, at the edge of their world, or at least the part of it I could see. They stood in a circle. I thought, well, I didn't think anything concrete. I felt a lot, and I thought many things, and some of them were connected, and that was good enough. And I lifted my arm and slowly, slowly dropped my finger down into the middle of their circle. Not hard, not enough to break the surface with the rest of my hand or to make any waves or long-reaching ripples. Just a light tap, really. As I watched, the place my finger had touched turned into a line, an interruption of the water below me. It was like when you stick your finger down into a bathtub while the water is draining, and it starts to make a miniature tornado around where your finger submerged. It was like that, but it didn't look like I had caused a tornado for the speck people. Just a huge downpour, only the width of my finger, in the middle of their circle. The speck people went crazy when my rainstorm reached them, and I watched as some ran away from the rain, and some ran right through it. Some knocked others down or pulled them into the thick of it. Just as quickly as I'd pulled my finger back from the water, the storm in their world faded.
I watched as Amy did this, and suddenly the whole thing felt unbearably heavy. We were huge, we were bringers of storms and who knows what else, and we were unseen by the two small people below us. I was struck with a sense of power, and a sense of holy cow, we have to leave before we mess with these people too much. I started to feel sick. I tapped Amy on the shoulder. She got up, and we heard a very weird, wet sound somewhere behind us. When I turned, it was Puddles who greeted my gaze. The sick feeling grew deeper, more concentrated in my gut. Puddles was happily lapping up water from one of the pools. With every pass of his tongue on the water, the ripples expanding from his mouth grew more expansive, somehow darker. The water stopped reflecting the clear blue of the sky above us and took on a more threatening color. I could only imagine what it looked like for the world below. Amy scrambled forward and scooped him up before he could do any more damage, but the lingering lashes from his tongue tore into their sky like open wounds, desperate to join together into one super wound. I turned away and took some deep breaths before any of us had to discover what giant vomit could do to their world.
It wasn't Puddle's fault. He was just doing what dogs do. But I felt the same deep dread Vera did. I felt like I was the world's older sister, and our parents had died, and I was left in charge of this tiny, fragile sibling who looked up to me, and I was just a kid myself, but I had to figure out a way not to screw them up while I raised both of us. But I'd let them down. Basically, I felt awful.
When I looked back at the pond, I couldn't see anything, not even our own reflections. I didn't know if that meant the world had been concealed by the congealing wounds or if it was gone completely. The only thing I could think, and this is truly awful, I know, but the only thing I could think for a few seconds was that could have been our world. Any second, a giant dog tongue could come split open our sky and plunge our world into darkness. That's all it would take. And I was glad it was their world, not mine, not Amy's, people that I didn't know and never would know and never would be able to name or enumerate to my conscience.
I didn't have much time to dwell on my big sister feelings, because there came a snap somewhere to our left. It was the same sort of snap that had come with Vera's landing. It meant we weren't alone there. Vera heard it too, and her eyes met mine, full of hurt and curiosity. Movement in the trees behind her pulled my stare away. I thought it was Gary, but instead I found Kiara there, sitting in a tree, staring at us. No, staring past us. Something was different about her. A coldness in her eyes I didn't recognize from the girl I knew in Gilded Hill. Another snap came from the same direction as the last, and I turned to face it. Nothing. I looked back, and more nothing. Kiara slash not Kiara was gone again.
The snaps became heavier and closer and harsher, and suddenly they were right there and I couldn't think and I couldn't move because there they were. Mabel. Mabel was there, and the scarred man from the hospital morgue. The empty, shattered vial that once held such cursed blood was hanging from Mabel's neck, jagged edges stabbing into her collarbone and drawing equally cursed blood there. Mabel's eyes were frothing with hate and intent on revenge, and she and her zombie henchman were in hot pursuit of us. Or they would have been, if we were moving. Why weren't we moving? Why didn't I feel all-consuming fear?
I remembered thinking that thing about how nothing could go wrong in this place, and thinking about how I'd known something would ruin that, and still, something calm blocked the fear from rising up inside me. Mabel, Vera's crazy murderous aunt, and her mountainous sidekick I placed from Vera's tape about the hospital had no such peace. Only clear-cut killer instinct trained on us. We didn't move. I raised my foot, hoping to maybe get some momentum going to make us start running away, but it proved useless. Not just because that field beckoned us to remain calm.
As we watched, Mabel and Dr. Zombie got closer and closer. My head was pounding, but my heart stubbornly stayed put. I heard a caw, and Gary swooped down from the trees into Mabel's face, and she fell. With a splash that resonated like a gunshot, she fell into one of the pools and sank and sank and sank. The echo resonated long after her shriek, and she was gone just as suddenly and completely as she'd shown up. Dr. Zombie stared into the water a moment before jumping in too. It would have been funny, his dogged loyalty to Mabel when he could have just as easily grabbed us, but, you know, he could have just as easily grabbed us, so not terribly funny.
We were alone again. The peace returned to the field, and the beauty we'd crashed into enveloped us on all sides. I looked at the pond Puddles had drunk from. The world it had been was gone. In its place was a new world, but an old world all the same, and one that looked strikingly familiar. It was Gilded Hill. I recognized the teeny tiny pet cemetery in Vera's little neighborhood.
My mother hadn't been with them. Mabel and her terrifying sidekick, they didn't have my mother. I realized this after they disappeared into the pool. She was out there somewhere. I thought finding them would mean finding my mother too, but she wasn't with them. They had found us, and she wasn't with them, so where was she?
Something in the Gilded Hill pool looked off. It was the same dark blue the other world had dissolved into, the one that didn't match our own sky. I was too tired to make another portal, though. And it was home, right there. And we knew Mabel wouldn't be there, because she had fallen into someplace else. So I took Vera's hand, and we walked into that pond, and we sank into it.
Before my head went under, I read the signpost next to the pool. It said, Gilded Hill, clear as day. Water filled my ears and my eyes. It said Gilded Hill, but it was backwards.